1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Wednesday edition of the program, Tony La Russa is not afraid to face his critics. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new exclusive interview with Jeff Joniak, the radio voice of the Bears and the sports director at WBBM Radio. We talk with him about the Bears draft, when Justin Fields will start, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, they have an average of $889. State Farm agent Brian McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Brian today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Even when you're a contender, even when you're supposed to be a World Series winner, every season, you go through ebbs and flows. Remember 2016? Remember where the Cubs were in 2016? They had many problems during the year. There were issues. There were concerns. They overcame everything they won. They were down 3-1 in the World Series, and they came back to win. I know they won 103 games, and they were elite, but even the best team, like the Cubs, wasn't dominant. They had issues. They overcame them and won. That shows how strong they are, how much willpower they have. But they still had issues. There were times in which everybody thought, this isn't a World Series team. There were times in which Joe Maddon and his leadership ability were questioned publicly. There were times in which players were degraded for their performances. Rightfully so, if they didn't perform, but the point is, the World Series heroes that we know today were at one point criticized because they weren't performing. No one is safe from criticism, from slumps, from issues. No one. Baseball is not a sprint. It's a marathon. Way different than the NFL. In the NFL, you could go 16-0 and go all the way to the Super Bowl. It's such a small amount of games. If you catch fire, you win, great. If you don't, move on to next year. Not in baseball. Not when you play 162 games, plus playoffs. It's a grind. And every day, there's something new. Someone gets hurt. Someone slumps, someone does great, someone makes a mistake. You're always going to be called out on it, and you're always going to have to answer to it. The only way you prove everybody wrong is if you overcome it and win. I understand Sox fans are not happy with what happened this past weekend. If you're supposedly the best team in baseball, how in the world do you get swept by the Yankees? Fair point. Tony La Russa did make a mistake. This, of course, from the Chicago Sun-Times. Quote, choosing to continue with left-hander Aaron Bummer rather than give Liam Hendricks a clean inning in the ninth, Tony La Russa watched Bummer allow a leadoff single to Clint Frazier, who then stole second as Brett Gardner struck out. DJ LeMahieu was walked intentionally, and when Tyler Wade's dribbler to the right side of the infield went for a single, the bases were loaded for Judge. Hendricks got Judge to swing at the first pitch and threw four consecutive balls to complete the walk-off loss. La Russa said, quote, we liked the matchups in the ninth inning. And the other thing, you still have to think at some point you may need Liam for more for a possible tenth inning. The toughest break was Wade's infield hit. The Sox are 26-19 after losing three games in a row for the first time this season. So objectively, how should we interpret this? I know Sox fans who are panicking. That's a fact. I know people who are complaining on Twitter, all scared, wondering if, again, is Tony La Russa the right guy? Is he getting in the way of this team? This is all on him. What's next? They're collapsing. Sound the alarm. No. Did he make a mistake? Yes, he's made a lot of mistakes. He has. As I see this happen more and more, I do lose more confidence in him. That said, here's what I do know. La Russa, proven winner. Season is early. There's still time to get back on track. That's the biggest problem with this team right now. They're inconsistent. They are. One week, it looks like they're ready to win the World Series. The next week, they're getting swept. As much as it was La Russa's fault, remember, who walked in the run? What a great investment, huh? $50-plus million for a closer who comes in and can't throw a strike. Reminds me of something the Cubs did. Oh, that's right, Craig Kimbrel. And I know now he's doing great, but for 2 years, he was a bust of a signing. It's really weird. Every time I see a closer get paid, they suck. Remember when Wade Davis got paid? Left the Cubs, 32 out of 33 saves, did a great job, goes to the Rockies, ERA of 8. Jake McGee gets paid by the Rockies, ERA of 8. I'm not saying don't pay a relief pitcher, but I'm saying buyer beware. This is a recurring pattern in baseball. Paying a relief pitcher. The real shame is, I liked Liam Hendricks. Thought he'd be great. For those of you who don't know, I developed a stat for baseball called FBRA. You can find it on my website, sportstalkchicago.com. FBRA determines how great a pitcher is, a closer, in multiple inning saves. Liam Hendricks in 2019 had an FBRA of 1.53. He did great in multiple inning save opportunities. Great closer. 86 innings pitched in 2019. The guy's a workhorse, or he was a workhorse. But the way he's being used now is not good. I get La Russa's concerns about possibly there being a 10th inning. But you're going to tell me there's no one else in that bullpen who could have thrown? It just had to be Liam Hendricks in that situation in the tie game. There were definitely other guys you could have used. But it didn't happen. I really didn't like that move at all. Liam Hendricks should have been given a clean inning. That's a fact. I'm not going to blame him for not knowing how to throw a strike. That's his problem. But should have gotten a clean inning. Should have gotten time. Proper time to start the inning with the start of the order and send them down. And I guarantee you it would have been different. The game would have been different if he started the inning and not came in when all trouble broke loose. That didn't happen. So they got swept out of New York, 26-19. And I still hear the panic button. Bob Nightingale, who was on the program with me last week, just wrote up an article today. Tony La Russa said, quote, "I know how I'll be judged. Under scrutiny, White Sox manager Tony La Russa not afraid to face his critics." There is a clear divide here. This is not a good story for the White Sox. It isn't. You're supposed to be a World Series contender. There should not be issues about managers, about there being a divide, about the media covering him, about critics. And may I say, overly critical critics. I mean, I've seen real writers just make jokes about La Russa, of his age. Remember, the media is stirring this up. We heard what Tim Anderson said. He's like a dad to us. Tim Anderson likes him. Jose Abreu likes him. But your mean Mercedes thing, of course, was overblown. Did La Russa handle it right? Not really, no. But everyone moved on. So what's the real deal here? What's the real problem with Tony La Russa? I know what it is. No one wanted him. No one wanted him. And when they got him, they found a way to do everything they could to get him out. So every time they lose, every time he makes a mistake, he'll be put under an intense microscope. Unfair. You need to stop hitting the panic button every time something small, minuscule, goes wrong. Once again, it's May. Once again, 26-19. No one said today, right now, the Sox have to be the best team in baseball. No, there's time. This team is young. Let's not forget that. Do any of these guys have legitimate playoff experience? Not really. I know Andrew Vaughn said it was a playoff atmosphere. He's right. But how do you know? No one's had playoff experience yet. These guys are learning on the fly. It's tough. And you've got a manager that maybe the players like, but the media doesn't. This is unnecessary media attention. We should be focusing on what they need to do to win, not bashing La Russa every second. And this doesn't mean I'm supporting him. I like the hiring, but that's besides the point. The point is, there needs to be a united front. This stuff can't get to their heads. They're going to lose that. That's the problem here. There's an intense, intense microscope on this team. I get it. They're young, flashy, new, supposed to be great. I understand it. But the more and more the pressure is applied, the less results you're going to get. There's no need for pressure right now. There isn't. They're doing fine. Yes, they got swept out of New York. I know. You could be outraged. You could blame La Russa for the bad pick with pitching. I do too. But the season isn't over yet. Everyone said the season was over when they started 8-9. Everyone said the season was over when your mean Mercedes and that whole thing happened. Now what? We're saying the season is over because they got swept by New York in New York in May. It's May. There is time. And all I keep seeing is, well, La Russa better not screw this up. How has he screwed it up so far? Has he made mistakes? Sure. But has he screwed it up? Are they not making the playoffs right now? Are they 10 games under 500? If that was the case, I'd say, yes, he screwed it up, should be fired. No reason to yet. No reason to panic. And unfortunately, we're at this spot where the minute he does something wrong, he's taken down. That's not going to get you anywhere. It won't. That will not help anybody. And it's going to cause more pressure, more media pressure, stirring the pot, everybody getting riled up. You could say he's not your guy. You have every right to say that. But if they're winning, if there are some results, and I understand there have been mistakes, but there are some results, you have to let it ride out, for sure. You can't storm down and say it's over now. It's May. It's May. There's time to get it together. There's time to make things better. It's irresponsible to say it's all over. I'm done. Can't take it. La Russa, it's his fault. Just because you didn't want him doesn't mean he's a bad manager. Just because you didn't want Mitch Trubisky doesn't mean they didn't win with him. Whether it was the defense or not, they won with La Russa. They are winning. It hasn't gotten to a point where the manager's become bigger than the team and he's making decisions purposefully that are causing them to be a 500 team, to be a below 500 team. That hasn't happened yet. They're still about 500, still atop the division, still a very good team. And everybody knows what their intentions are for the season. None of that's changed, despite this sweep, despite the 8-9 start, despite the whole Mercedes thing. We have to remember that. It is not time to hit the panic button. This is like the third or fourth time I've heard White Sox fans panic and say fire La Russa already. It's May. It's May. There's time here. There's time. Everyone is telling you La Russa is wrong for this team. What they're failing to tell you, or what they're failing to really inform you, is that let's focus on the team itself, not on the manager. Why did they lose this past weekend? Why did they get swept? Hitters couldn't hit. Did La Russa make a mistake in Game 3? Yes. Who walked him in, though? Hendrick Steele. This is a team effort. You win as a team, you lose as a team. Have there been a few games in which maybe La Russa single-handedly cost them the game? Sure, but it hasn't been every one. You have to keep this stuff in mind. Quote, I know how I'll be judged. Yes, he does. How do you think it feels for him to hear this stuff day in and day out, to know people are against him, media included? It's really an unnecessary distraction, I think. Just because you don't want him, that doesn't mean you turn this into a big locker room thing, you get in his head, and then they start losing. You could vocally say, I don't want him. But if you're covering the team day in and day out, this stuff will get to them eventually, and that could be the cause of their downfall. You don't know. Could be. Could play a role. The best course of action is to follow this team and see how they could win. Let's talk about matchups. Let's talk about personnel. What they're going to do. Who's hitting? Who is it? How could that be fixed? Not, oh, the manager. That's all I hear. Oh, my goodness, the manager. All right, we get it. We get it. I know he wasn't your guy. But look, the season is going on. Your team is winning. And even though he's made mistakes, it seems like the guys trust him. For now. Let's focus on what they could do to win a World Series. Not, I can't stand the manager. That act is old. There's a long way to go. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And there's a ways to go for this season. The Cubs did not have a smooth ride when they won in 2016. Even though they won 103 games. There were issues. There were questions. They were down 3-1 in the World Series. That did happen. And they pulled it out. Because as a team, they were capable of overcoming it. When you're criticizing the manager and tearing them down this early in the season, how do you think it'll go the rest of the way? The mindsets here need to change. The way we cover this team needs to change a bit. This is too much for the White Sox. It is unnecessary to be this critical. Now, could change later. If this same stuff is still happening in August, September, that's a big problem. It's May. Remember what I said on opening day. We will not know anything about anybody for 30, 40, 50 games. We know who the White Sox are. Great team, World Series contender. They're ready to win. They're not a middle team like the Cubs. We know what they're supposed to do. So let them do it. Let them be that team. Don't overly criticize now. It's not necessary yet. Things need to be worked out. With La Russa, sure, but with this team. Certain guys need to step up. Liam Hendricks needs to do something because this is ridiculous. Way too much money thrown down the drain for a closer who can't even throw a strike. It's not all La Russa. Some of it is, not all of it. And as we sit here, day in and day out, and we see this further, bigger divide around the team about their manager, I feel like that's only going to be detrimental. That won't help. How is that going to help matters for the White Sox? To hear the same criticism and the same storylines all year. Oh, it's because of La Russa. La Russa's a bad manager. He's a disgrace to the White Sox. Think about it. How would you feel if you heard that all year at your job? It would eventually get to you. This is all unnecessary. None of this needs to get to anybody right now. What they need to do is win and play well. Let them play. Let them play well. Let them learn on the fly. It's a young team. There's no need to come at them with a hammer and take them all out right away. Let them breathe. Let them play. And then we'll see what happens. Stop jumping to conclusions. Stop every week saying, oh my gosh, he needs to go because of one bad thing happening. There is time for this team to grow. But you have to let them do their job. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Jeff Joniak comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus, must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox, of course, are back. NBA playoffs in full swing. Same with the NHL, plus Bears prop bets. How many touchdowns will Justin Fields throw? Heck, how many games will he start? This is, without question, the best time to put down some money on all of that and make a whole lot more back. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the radio voice of the Chicago Bears and the sports director at WBBM. Please welcome Jeff Joniak to the program. Jeff, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you. Glad summer's here and looking forward to enjoying a little time off and then get back at it and start up the process of the 2021 season. Can't wait.
So, Jeff, what was your reaction to the Justin Fields pick?
You know, I hosted draft coverage on WBBM that night, and in retrospect, I felt that we didn't give it as much attention, not attention, but like the factor of wow. And Dan Pompey and I, we talked about that. Tom Thayer, Hubarkish was on that night. And, you know, it was, in retrospect, quite stunning because the chances of them getting a quarterback of that nature where they were sitting at number 20 certainly complicated the process. But I recall when the trade was made, but before that, when Denver took Surtain, I literally said, wow, because not because they took Surtain. I knew there was a connection with George Payton, with his dad. You know, Patrick Surtain Sr. was with him in Miami. But, wow, I think the Bears are going to – they're going to do something here. And sure enough, they did. And getting him was, you know, an outstanding move. Going into the draft, didn't want to give up a ton of draft capital to make a move of this nature. And they didn't, in my opinion. You know, one first round pick is plenty. And let's keep it at that and move on and continue to build the roster. But it's very good to have him.
What excites you specifically about his game?
Well, you know, I'm going to break it into two parts, John. First of all, seeing him live at minicamp for two practices, you know, the smoothness at which he operates and moves. And that's what you look at. You're not seeing a lot. Number one, there's no helmets. There's no pads. There's no pressure of a pass rush or anything like that, but just his movement skills. So I look at feet. I look at how he throws the football, how it's coming out of his hand, those types of things. Just, and the word I keep coming to is smooth. It's very smooth, even as something as mundane as a handoff and how he hands the ball off. So there's a lot of the footwork and things that of that nature, the fundamentals that, you know, just operate very almost nonchalantly for him. He's clearly a great athlete. He's got a big frame. And, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons, and even from out of his own mouth, to Russell Wilson. And I can see that, but a bigger Russell Wilson, you know, in terms of height. And, you know, he's still young, so he's going to add. And he's a big gym rat, from what I understand. So he's going to be in the weight room. He's going to add muscle. And he's going to really fill out over the time, over the years. So I think this is, you know, if you're putting a list together of all the different aspects of what you'd want in a modern-day quarterback, he fills all those boxes.
Jeff Joniak here on Sports Talk Chicago. So, Jeff, based on what you've seen, what do you think about who starts game one?
I'm still going to go with the plan. I'm going to go with Andy Dalton until something proves otherwise, and I don't have a problem with that. I knew I was going to get this question because that's what everybody wants. There's nowhere I go where somebody doesn't say, okay, so he's starting, right? No, there's a plan, and let's go through the process. You know, I've made the same analogy on draft night. You know, you don't quite know what the plan is. You kind of have an idea what teams want, but it's like a painting being, you know, half finished when everybody reacts. Let's just wait and see. Let's get through training camp. We're still in a COVID environment. I don't know what training camp will look like. I have no idea. Neither do you or anybody else. And let's just see what the process brings. If a guy is so good and so adaptable and understands the system so well, you know, it'll be hard to keep him off the field, you'd imagine. But right now, let's just wait and see. Andy Dalton's a veteran quarterback. He's certainly well-experienced and well-versed in many different systems. And he is a point guard quarterback. So that also fits what the Bears would like to do, get the ball in the hands of the playmakers and get them, let him do something after the catch. You know, this quarterback has a very good big ball arm, and I'm sure that's also very inviting for head coach Matt Nagy and the offensive staff, but there's a lot to learn. And we've seen plenty of quarterbacks damaged by being rushed out there. Just don't rush it. He's not a new toy that everybody wants to play with. He's a young quarterback that still has to learn.
Could you see him winning with Dalton or being competitive and playing competitive football?
Sure. Well, I mean, why not? He was putting up big numbers in Dallas, and he had a heck of a supporting cast, obviously, at the skill positions and a pretty good offensive line. So, you know, if those things come through, you know, it all starts to me. It's not about this year about, you know, what happens with Andy Dalton and Justin Fields. Is the offensive line, the way it will be ultimately constructed, is it going to play well? Because great quarterback play overcomes some things, but it doesn't overcome a lot of things. And so that offensive line, it's on their shoulders to really start to play consistent quality football, hopefully stay healthy. And I'm talking about James Daniels and making sure he's ready to go. And that's an important piece. He's a high draft pick that has to have a great year. And what happens in the battle for left tackle with Tevin Jenkins? Is it a one-man show? I mean, is he going to be the guy? And that's a lot to learn too. That learning curve, the focus should be on that, in my opinion, the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
How do you feel about the draft picks Ryan Pace made to bolster the line after Fields?
You know, he's got 10 homegrown players now on the offensive line. So whether it be undrafted guys like Sam Mustafa, who clearly is on a very high trajectory at center after what he, and he's a leader, he's a team leader already. That's an undrafted player. Alex Bars did very well as a starter, and he'll compete as well and at a minimum be a swing player. So those are two young guys. They drafted two young guys last year. They drafted two more this year. I'm very excited about Larry Borum also. Very athletic player despite his size. He's dropped a significant amount of weight to be put in this position, and I know they want to add a little bit more, but he's a big dude who can move. So I think that's going to be a person to watch in training camp as well. They definitely needed somebody to compete for that nickel spot. So Thomas Graham will. They've invested some resources into that position. But, you know, Buster Skrien, when healthy, was more than adequate player and a veteran savviness in a very difficult position. There's so much you have to know at the slot nickel. You have to know what everybody else is doing, the other 10 guys, and dealing with some very high-quality athletes at the tight end position and guys out of the backfield and the slot receivers that are so dangerous in this league. That's a very important position. So I'm glad, even though it's a sixth-round pick, that's a guy that I'm intrigued by. Played 40 games. He got his hands on 40 balls in games. So that's a significant number. He's not the fastest guy, but he triggers quickly downhill, and I'm very intrigued to watch him as well. And, you know, overall, all the guys that they drafted, those guys are all going to get a chance to play, I think, this year. So I'm talking about Daz Newsome and Kyrus Tonga as well.
How do you feel about Newsome specifically in the wide receiving corps?
Well, you know, again, he's a sixth-round pick. He's got a lot to learn, too. And those guys that we've seen over the years, you know, we're still kind of waiting on Anthony Miller, the second-round pick, and Riley Ridley, the fourth-round pick a couple of years ago, hasn't had a lot of playing time. Obviously, Mooney emerged last year, but, you know, receivers today, no matter where they're picked, even undrafted guys, they make an impact if given the opportunity because the passing games in college are so now very similar to what they are in the NFL, but there's still a lot of adjustments and concepts that have to be digested and learned, and it's not an ad lib. You're supposed to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. So, you know, sometimes when they're young, they don't get that. But this guy's a baller. He's a football player. Everything I've learned about him and whom I've talked to, he's pure football. He's kind of a uniter as well. He's got a big personality, brings people together. So he's an interesting character for sure.
Who's the X factor of the draft class? Who are you most excited by right now?
Well, I'm going to go Borum. I'm going to go Borum as an X factor, as you know, because he's a fifth round offensive tackle who has the ability to swing inside. You know, they're paying Jermaine Ifedi to play that right tackle spot, but I'll go with Borum as a guy that I'm excited about. And, you know, I'll do a X factor A to Herbert, the running back out of Virginia Tech, because his body type, again, when I look at players, I'm looking at how they're moving, granted without pads, what they're doing and what they look like. And he's a thick-thighed running back who I think really earned the respect of teammates and coaches quickly at Virginia Tech, being there just for 1 year and put up some terrific numbers. And he brings special teams to the table as well. And so there are some special teams holes that are big ones that have to be filled. So I think that his addition really rounds out the running back room significantly.
How excited are you about the running back situation with Montgomery back and Tariq Cohen healthy too?
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be challenging for Tariq to come back after the death of his brother. Let's be real on that, you know. So hopefully he'll be okay, and prayers with him and his family. But coming off an ACL, too, you don't exactly know how it's going to be. But the addition of Williams as well to David Montgomery, who I think, you know, I've spoken with you about this before. I'm very high on David Montgomery. I think he's going to be an outstanding running back in this league for a while. And I think we saw a big glimpse of that in the last half of last season. So the best is yet to come from him. Again, if he can stay healthy and not have any nicks along the way, there's plenty of options in that backfield now, and they're good options. They're very strong options. So I'm excited about the backfield. And Montgomery is a much better pass receiver than people give him credit for, too. And I said in there his rookie year that he's a 10-touchdown-a-year guy, and I think he's going to wind up being that way, whether it be running it in or catching it.
So, Jeff, what's your expectation for this upcoming season?
You have to talk to me after training camp. I always reserve the right to make that, because things change drastically. You know, injuries, still there's player movement going to happen after June 1st potentially. So, you know, what's the roster going to look like? You know, how's everybody's mental? You know, did Eddie Goldman come back ready to play? Is he mentally into it? Are there going to be guys that are going to opt out? You know, that still could be an option, you know, because we are still dealing with this stuff. So, there's no information I have, but, you know, around the league, just keep an eye on things because you just don't know. And, you know, that makes a difference. And how things are blending with this new offensive coaching staff, basically, with all the new additions. And then the defensive coaching staff, you know, where are they at? How's Sean Desai adapting? I know he's a very smart guy, but this is his first rodeo in terms of being a defensive play caller. So all those things I'll have to report to you after training camp. But, you know, they have the makings still of a very good defense. They've added more assets to the offense. The quarterback play has to improve. So no matter who's in there, that needs to be a necessity. And these playmakers have to make plays. They have to make plays with the ball in their hands.
Does the schedule concern you, the strength of the schedule?
Yes, it's very hard. I think it's a very hard schedule. But the good news is the entire NFC North has a very hard schedule. They all do. The strength of schedule, they're all in the top eight, the entire division. So it's going to be gritty, to say the least. It's a challenging travel schedule. Unique in that there's no back-to-back road trip games or home games. I don't recall a schedule like that before in my time calling the games. So that is interesting, and you certainly know where you're going to be. There's no wondering. It's an alternating schedule. That's a benefit, in my opinion. You know, not many short weeks. There's some short turnarounds because of Thanksgiving, but players like that extra. It's like a bye week, so they don't mind the Thanksgiving game, frankly. And but the teams that they're playing, and you're basing it on the year before,
right?
Again, come talk to me, you know, when everybody's rosters are set. So, you know, the powerhouses are going to probably be the powerhouses, but everybody's one bad quarterback injury away from being just like everybody else.
What happens to the Bears' playoff chances if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play?
You know, I think it's still a very good football team. So, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a huge difference maker, but I just still have a hard time believing he won't be in Green Bay. I just don't. I just don't think he's, you know, I don't see the value in them trading him to a team that is going to instantly become a contender, given what they get in return. You know, you're looking, you better get a starting quarterback and higher first round picks than you would be if you sent them somewhere where they're going to compete for a title and get late first round picks. I'm not saying that I have any insight into what's going to happen, but I just have a hard time believing he won't play in Green Bay. So, you know what? What you face whoever, he could be injured in the first week of the season, and that changes the direction too. So if they don't have him, that's how you look at it. If they have him, let's go beat the Packers.
More to come with Jeff Joniak in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Joniak, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jeff, two more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite Bears game that you've called over the years is what?
I mean, it has to be the NFC Championship game to get to the Super Bowl. If the Bears would have won the Super Bowl, I would have said that. But, you know, it's 1-1A. Certainly, those are magical moments, and they don't come around very often, and they haven't come around very often for all of us Bears fans. So, you know, it was a euphoric moment in the snow globe moment at Soldier Field to advance and knock out the Saints. And, you know, you piece back together. I was Drew Brees' first year, and to think that I'm now into this as long as, you know, first year with the Saints, in his retirement coming this year with the Saints. It's kind of weird, but, and then the Super Bowl, you know, due in part to the opening kickoff by Devin Hester. So that will always live with me forever.
Did you think they'd win after that kickoff went back by Hester?
Yes. If they would have kept running the ball, I believe they would have won. And they stopped running the football and put the ball into Rex's hands and in inclement conditions. And that proved to be, in my opinion, a miscalculation. Thomas Jones wanted the ball, and the O-line was blocking what was not a great defensive line because of a lot of circumstances over the course of the season for the Colts. And I just think the momentum was on the Bears side. But, you know, when you look back at that, I think anyone who played on that team, they may not admit it publicly, but I know deep down in their heart, they believe that they would have kept running the ball, they would have upset the Colts.
And Jeff, before we finish up today, last question, what's the funniest moment that you've had with Tom Thayer in the booth?
Oh gosh, there's so many. I mean, most of it because of my own idiocy. So whether something stupid comes out of my mouth or me forgetting my glasses and it ticks him off to the point that, you know, it kind of weaves a theme through the whole broadcast. But that's the beauty of hanging with your best friend on the radio right there every Sunday. You have these moments that you take your relationship to the air, and it just becomes part of the fabric of the broadcast. And that's true for our entire crew. We're very close behind the scenes, and the guys that people don't hear about, the people that work on the broadcast, I value as some of my closest friends, and we look at each other as family. So you get a lot of funny moments, but too many to get into right now.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on, and best wishes, of course, as the new season comes up. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, John.
Great talk there with Jeff Joniak, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Jeff Joniak himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTalbin, Tomorrow Entertainment, for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Where are the turtles?